values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Final hour of the show for this week. If you're heading out of town, just be patient. You know, traffic's going to be rough. Everybody heading out of town this weekend. And keep it locked here to KTAR News. We'll get you traffic reports that will get you out of town safely and as quickly as possible. Speaking of getting out of town in the freeways, yesterday, a report of, we never want to hear, of a trooper. This time it was a state trooper shot in the line of duty, 19th Avenue and the 101. I talked about this once this morning, learning more about the suspect. The names have been released. The suspect's name is Howard Lamar Johnson. He's 34 years old. Sonia Hernandez, the 27-year-old that was booked along with him. We don't know much more of the details. They haven't released a lot of details about the officer being shot, where he was shot. We do know that it's not life-threatening injuries. And a couple of things, I'm going to walk through some of the stuff I talked about this morning. And that is, when you hear non-life-threatening injuries, it's great news. Let's be honest. There is a deep breath by anybody that no one died. The other thing, though, is you don't know exactly the extent of those injuries. I've been in contact, not directly in contact, but I've been getting updates on the condition of officers that have been injured in the line of duty. And many times it alters their lives. It takes them a very long time to ever return to duty if they're even able to. So just because it's not life threatening doesn't mean it's not life altering. So I'm praying for this trooper. I hope you are too, that these are injuries that he can recover from soon and get back to work if that's what he chooses to do, but get back to the life he wants as soon as possible for him and his family. The other part of this has to do with traffic stops. I'm going to get to a couple of things, but before I don't want to even talk so much about the suspects because I'm so tired of them becoming the center of attention with things. You've got men and women that patrol the freeways. If you haven't been pulled over before, good for you. I'm genuinely happy for you. But for those of us that have, I've been pulled over and not even realized I was speeding. You know, I drive pretty fast. Most people that know I drive fast. But I mean, just cruising along, I got pulled over once by a trooper in the West Valley on the 10. And I was paying no attention, so much so that I didn't even know where he came from. And it was a very funny story in the end, but pulled me over and asked me if I knew why I was pulled over. And I said, I don't even know where you came from. And he explained I was speeding and that I said, I believe you. I said, I looked down at my speedometer and I was speeding. I just wasn't paying attention. And he wrote me a citation that I deserved. And we went on with our lives, went on with our days. But the interaction, this was a trooper. The interaction was one that was very professional. Every interaction I've ever had with a trooper has been professional. They are great ambassadors for the state. Their job is highway safety. Sometimes it involves writing citations. Sometimes it's making DUI arrests. But in recent weeks, we just saw a trooper. It happened with a deputy as well, but I think a trooper recently went head-on in a collision with a car that was a confused woman driving the wrong way on the freeway at night. We know that they put their lives on the line, and not just troopers, cops everywhere. So there is no such thing as a routine traffic stop. So let me go to that first. If you get pulled over, not just this weekend, ever, and a cop is on edge, if he or she approaches your car a little bit abrasive or a little bit, not even aggressive, but certainly not in a friendly demeanor, cut them a break. They do not know what they're walking up on. Especially if there's more than one person in your vehicle. And now that you've got one officer or trooper or deputy dealing with a car full of people or multiple people in a vehicle, they're not sure of what they're walking up on. Are you going to be combative? Are you going to be argumentative? Are you going to be friendly? They don't know. And until they decipher that, they're going to do what training tells them to do, which is there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop. Follow the protocol. Do what you're supposed to do for officer and driver safety issues. Not to mention, if it happens on a freeway, they're generally dealing with cars traveling at about 80 miles an hour flying by, and they're also trying to make sure that you or they don't get killed by somebody driving past. So cut them a break. Understand, you know, be a little understanding of their situation. But as far as this shooting goes, you have an officer shot in the, or a trooper shot in the line of duty, and then agencies, multiple agencies, go into action to try to catch the guy that did this. How many lives were endangered? How many people's lives were in danger in addition to that trooper during this time frame? And this person endangered himself, endangered so many other people. They found him holed up in an apartment complex in the West Valley, like 67th Avenue and Olive in Maryvale. And they had to empty apartments, I'm sure. SAU or the SWAT team had to go in, risk their safety as well, to get this guy out. For what reason? Who knows? Who knows? But at what point are we, the supporters of law enforcement, going to truly support law enforcement? Because what I'll do is I'll follow this to its conclusion. In other words, I will be able to, because there's public records that are available, we'll find out what happens. What are they going to set this guy bail at? Are they going to give him a bail? Or are they going to put him in, they're going to let him sit in jail until his trial date? What will a judge do? Will a judge take into account the number of lives he ignored when he tried to get away? The fact that he indiscriminately started shooting at a law enforcement officer that was just trying to do his job and, except for the grace of God, could have killed that trooper? These are the frustrating things about what happens in our justice system. And I've been more and more adamant about this. All of the legs of this stool have got to be working together or it tips over. You've got to have cops that are willing to do the job. This trooper showed his willingness, and so did all of the officers, including Phoenix SAU and all of the other assets they used. I'm sure they used the air units and others to follow this guy. And all the assets were employed to, A, make sure that the city stayed safe and all calls for service were answered while they pursued some maniac that didn't care about human life. So you have to have cops that are willing to do the job. You have to have prosecutors. They're going to gather the evidence and go to a judge and say, we don't want bail for this person, or it's got to be so extremely high that it's incomprehensible. You have to have them that will prosecute that case, that will be able to, that have the funding and the staffing to dedicate the man hours that it takes to prosecute these cases. But you also have to have a judge that will look at the evidence and look at the seriousness of the crime and say to an offender, that is not tolerated in our society. There is room for rehabilitation for everyone, but you are going to pay a hefty price. You shot. Being in possession of a gun when you're not supposed to, for me, if you're a convicted felon, that's room enough for you to say, I ignore gun laws. You're dangerous enough in my mind. But certainly from the judiciary, if this is someone that's used a handgun and shot at a police officer, doesn't society then dictate that you have shown yourself to be so dangerous that you may come out on the other end of this a changed person? And it's our hope that you do. But you are going to pay a hefty price for what you've done. I don't think anything I just said was unreasonable or a partisan political statement. What I just said was a reasonable statement about a civilized society. So if you're heading out of town this weekend, one last thing on this. If you're heading out of town this weekend, do yourself, do us all, do them a favor. And if you are pulled over, cut law enforcement a break, be a little understanding. But if you come in contact with someone in law enforcement, thank them for what they do. Let them know you realize it's a dangerous job and you appreciate them doing it while you're out having a good time this weekend. It even could be first responders, because you know the lakes are going to be dangerous. People are drinking and partying in a very crowded place. And if you have a medical emergency, there are people on duty all weekend long to make sure that you party safely. And so I think they all deserve a debt of gratitude from us. I think we all should be thanking them. Coming up in just a moment, we get you caught up on the biggest news stories of the day. We call it Did You Hear This? So please stick around for it.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's get you caught up on the big news headlines. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Arizona Senior Senator Kyrsten Sinema went to the Nogales port of entry and said that fixing the problems at the border must be a multi-pronged approach.
They also need additional fencing to close the gaps that exist, and they need more technology so they can have cameras and detection on the ground, more cameras so they can have situational awareness. We have several miles of border that have no road, so migrants can run through that.
Who is responsible for getting border agents the tools they need?
The federal government. You know, this is, we've got to get funding. And I think what she is talking not about just to the White House as far as policy goes, but Congress has got to fund a lot of these projects. We have got to get pieces of legislation that work on helping the Border Patrol and CBP, two different missions in the same place. One guards the ports of entry. The other looks for people sneaking in where these gaps are. They need to give them the tools, including the labor force, to do their job. Technology, structure, and people. They need to do it. She's right. But will people rally behind the piece of legislation? They will if you and I make them.
Summer in Arizona comes with high excessive temperatures, and a report from the New York Times shows just how dangerous heat waves could be for some Arizonans.
If there is a blackout during a heat wave in Phoenix, more than 12,000 people could die, and close to 800,000 people would need emergency care for heat-related illnesses. This would overwhelm the hospital system in Phoenix, which only has 3,000 ER beds.
What are some long-term solutions Arizona can take to lower the chance of heat-related deaths?
Stop making electric cars. Get rid of electric ovens. Let's put in gas stoves everywhere. Everyone must have a gas stove in their house. Gas dryers, gas water heaters. Let's get rid of electric appliances as much as we can. I mean, of course, I'm kidding. But I just think part of the issue is infrastructure. We realize that the country, whether by force or by direction, is moving toward alternative sources of vehicles, such as, you know, we are looking now at battery-operated vehicles. But we've also got other resources that we are going to be using. If we don't build the infrastructure around this, we are destined. Look what California has been going through because of wildfires and brownouts. Texas, and they have a very weak structured system when it comes to infrastructure. We should be learning lessons from other places. Stop putting the cart before the horse, and let's get this where it needs to be with the power grid, and then let's start working on, or at least keeping up with, the progress we're making in other areas. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to catch you up on the biggest headlines.
The Arizona Cardinals are making waves this morning as they have released star wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins. ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum says he's surprised that they let him go.
You just wish they had gotten some value for him because he's a really, really good player, a front line wide receiver when he's healthy. And I understand the decision. I'm just a little surprised they didn't do it sooner, and certainly a little surprised they were able to get some compensation for him.
What kind of compensation should the Cardinals have gotten?
I don't know. The tough thing is nobody wanted his contract. Let's be, you know, remember, he had an injury. He also got dinged for using PEDs. So he's had a rough road, but there's no doubt he's one of the most talented receivers in the NFL. But how many NFL teams didn't realize this was coming? He made it very clear he didn't want to be a part of that locker room. He wanted to go to another team. He wants to win right away. He's getting closer to the end of his career. He wants to start going with a winner. There wasn't much of a chance he was going to be on the field. So why would a team trade and give value or whatever else for him, knowing that he was going to become available anyway, and now they can go and get him? The Cardinals, on the other hand, are sending a clear signal right now. This is the reset button. New leadership in the front office, new head coach, and they are cleaning house, even with star players. That also means a new attitude. Will it work? That's the question. There's no doubt that's the message they're sending.
The executive director of Honoring America's Veterans, Paula Pendine, says that Memorial Day is the one day that we pay tribute to our fallen soldiers. Pendine explains why you shouldn't use a certain greeting this weekend.
When people say Happy Memorial Day, that's really not the best way to frame it. It's better to say Remember Memorial Day and to reflect and to give a moment of pause to thank those people who have given their life to defend our freedom.
What is the best way we can pay tribute to our country's heroes?
Just remember a story, learn a story. I'm going to talk more about this at the end of the show, but our family, we like the celebrations. I'm not saying celebrate Memorial Day. I'm certainly not doing that either. But what we are doing is we recognize that for Americans, there's nothing more American than a barbecue and a pool party and going out and playing golf. I think that is as American as it gets, as American as the apple pie you're going to have for dessert. So again, from my family's perspective, there's nothing about that that's wrong. That's everything right that you should be doing. The thing that I would say, especially with young people, because we have so many veterans who lost comrades that are not willing to talk about it, they don't talk about it that much, those stories need to be told. So in Arizona, we've got some phenomenal examples of people that have given their lives for the cause. And we'll talk more about that as we move on in the show. But Pat Tillman is the biggest example and the superstar in Arizona. If you can't find another Arizona story or someone, if you want to talk about World War II, you want to go back and talk about how we got pulled into that, the USS Arizona, Pearl Harbor Day, whatever, then talk about those stories at least for a moment so a younger generation understands there's been significant sacrifice to provide the barbecue, in a sense, but the freedom we all enjoy. That would be a perfect Memorial Day in my family's eyes. Great job this week, Julia, as always. And toward the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit more about Memorial Day specifically before we close out the show. But in a moment, I want to go back to a topic. And this topic we just kind of covered a little bit, but there's a new wrinkle. Two things. The chief of staff for the governor resigned, why the governor says she resigned, and then a story about the governor saying an illegally funded program involving all-day kindergarten and empowerment scholarship accounts. Details on both next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks for being here. A topic that kind of kicked off yesterday evening with the resignation of the chief of staff for the governor and the comments made by the governor about why that happened and the news stories and what has been said about why it happened. And so it goes back. It has a lot to do with politics. And, you know, it always does. But the chief of staff left, and the governor said she was great. She did a great job in transition, and she reached across the aisle to get the budget done. And whether you agree with that or you didn't, depends on how close you were to the process, I guess. But it's interesting that she's left, and now who will she be replaced with? The chief of staff, because the rift is this, and it's not with Republicans. I mean, there's always going to be a rift between political parties. A Republican governor is going to have a tough time with the Democrat caucus. It doesn't necessarily always have to be adversarial, but it's certainly not going to be easy. But it is within her own party. There were a couple of things that happened. One of them is the confirmation of a department leaders and the adversarial relationship that they believe the governor and her chief of staff. They caved on the negotiations to get people confirmed. They don't believe that they were strong enough in that regard. They didn't like the fact that the governor vetoed a bill that was affectionately known as the tamale bill, which would have allowed private, you know, a citizen to cook food in their house and sell it in their neighborhood if they'd like to. The governor vetoed that and said, you can't do that. To me, that's a whole topic of its own. It goes a lot more into the mindset of someone that says, we know how to protect you from yourself. If your neighbor cooks tamales and brings them to you for Christmas and says, Merry Christmas, it's a Christmas gift and there's no problem with eating those tamales. If your neighbor is trying to raise money for Christmas gifts and they make tamales and sell them in the neighborhood, that's illegal and dangerous. Same kitchen, same cleanliness, same everything. One's for sale and one's free. One you can do, one you can't. You come to your own conclusion. But there were Democrats, many of them, that loved this bill and signed on to it. And then the governor vetoed it, made Democrats angry. Not angry enough to override the veto, but angry. So they were angry about her because you also understand the chief of staff is the chief of staff for a reason. They play a major role in a lot of the decision-making process and a lot of the things that happen. And last but not least, they were upset. They are upset that the governor didn't do enough to slow down, stop, reduce, diminish the ESA program, which is the Empowerment Scholarship Account program that is giving parents, working class, every parent, I don't care how working class you are, every parent the ability to control the tax dollars attached to their child. Anybody that is against that makes me laugh that you think that somehow that's a problem. You know, especially when you don't have a leg to stand on in public schools that are not performing. And here's where it gets really weird, because this is going to affect all-day kindergarten. $50 million that was in this ESA program, in this fund, is being pulled by the governor because she says it was illegally put there by the previous administration. The treasurer said, we didn't know anything about it. To be honest with you, we weren't told about this. We didn't get the letter from the governor. We found out in a press release. There was no negotiation. There was no discussion. There was no nothing. It was just sprung on us, first of all. But what's odd about this is you've got a Democrat governor complaining that the Republicans don't spend enough money on education. And yet they've bumped up against the aggregate expenditure limit 2 years in a row, which means we've spent so much money and we've allocated so much money for education that it broke a 1980 law and had to be overridden by a two-thirds majority of the Senate. So that by itself is nonsense. But above that, she's complaining about a lack of funding for education. And in a political maneuver, after she was criticized about not doing something about the ESA program, she pulls $50 million in funding out of this fund. That sounds political to me. You come to your own conclusion, but it sounds political to me. Now let's go further. The superintendent of public instruction is unique in this way. He is a second time he's done this job. The first time he did the job, he served with a Democratic governor in Janet Napolitano. So here we have the next Democrat governor, and he's superintendent again. You've got a Democrat pulling funding from education. Imagine this in the upside down political world we live in. A Democrat pulling funding from education and a Republican fighting for the funding. Here's some statements by Tom Horn. He said, first of all, if you're an ESA parent, it's not going to affect you. He said, reassuring Arizona families that the Empowerment Scholarship account is not affected by this week's decision from Governor Hobbs not to release $50 million in grant dollars for added kindergarten funding. The grant would have allowed parents of kindergartners who receive half-day funding through the existing ESA program to apply for a separate scholarship that would pay for the second half of their kindergarten day. It was fully funded by federal ARPA dollars and is a separate scholarship not connected to the existing state-funded ESA program. Does that make sense? So kids are getting funding for half of their kindergarten day. This $50 million would have funded the other half of their kindergarten day. Now that funding has been pulled, so now it's only half-day kindergarten for these kids. So he went on to say, all-day kindergarten, listen to how this is just, to me, this is a twilight zone. All-day kindergarten was a project by Democrat Governor Janet Napolitano during my first term as superintendent of public instruction. I agreed with the governor, and this became a bipartisan project at the legislature. With all-day kindergarten, students learned to read in kindergarten, and that gave them a head start in first grade. To eliminate funding for all-day kindergarten will reduce the academic performance of Arizona students, which is the precise opposite of what the government should be doing. So here you have all of this screaming about funding for the classroom. And so where's the AEA, the Arizona Educators Association? Where are the union? Where is Rebecca Gorelli and the rest of the leadership that is always screaming about lack of funding? Now you're complaining about where the funding is coming from and what the funding is being used, and parents have access to the ESAs and they can spend the money where they want, but you're not critical. So Governor Ducey added money. You don't think it was enough. That governor's budgets, along with the Republican-run legislature at the time, they added money. You didn't think it was enough money. This governor is subtracting money, and you're supporting it. So nobody tell me that it's just the right-wing Republicans that are playing politics. The next time you hear that, remind them of this. I cannot wait to see what kind of pretzel they twist themselves in. And the teachers' unions and the governor's office defending this for all day K. I can't wait. I cannot wait to hear how they do this. Tuesday should be a fun day. Coming up in just a moment, we are going to close out the week, this Memorial Day weekend, with some memories. And we'll talk about what the holiday should mean to people. Coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show as we get ready to wrap it up for the weekend. Heading out of town, we hope you've got a blessed weekend and a fun weekend planned for this Memorial Day. Want to spend a couple of moments sharing a story and a couple of stories, actually. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, I really do appreciate you following us. I lost a brother in Iraq 20 years ago tomorrow. I'm the oldest of three brothers and am blessed to have the two of them as my brother. But Tom was a special guy, and 20 years ago he lost his life. But there's also some significance around the story and what I've learned in the last 20 years of the men and women who have served our country. And this, especially this day, is set aside. Monday is set aside for those whose lives were lost. But I've been touched by the veterans. But I want to recognize a group of people that are not recognized as much as I think they should be, and that's the parents, because losing a brother still chokes me up 20 years later. I can't even imagine losing a child, but I have been so motivated and inspired by the parents that I've met, and there are so many of them, and I know there's no way I can list them all, but I've been thinking about them. First of all, I want to mention a guy named Tim Quinn, and I've never met Mr. Quinn. His son, Mike, was with my brother, and there were a total of 11 soldiers on the night my brother was killed that died. Two of them perished. One of them was my brother. The other was Mike Quinn. And I've never met Mr. Quinn. We've corresponded. He lives here in the Valley, and we've corresponded every year on Memorial Day. And we correspond maybe once or twice a year, just hello on text messages. But I never want to forget the suffering of a parent. Margie Bonds from Military Assistance Mission, who lost her son, Michael Marzano, and has spent the rest of her life honoring him by caring for the men and women that are serving currently. She is responsible for so much with her strength and the grace and the things that she has done. And again, these are parents, and I'm naming a bunch of people, the Emerson family. I just met Miss Emerson at an event recently, speaking to a group of people, and she was so eloquent. She heads up the Gold Star Mother Society. I believe she's the state chapter president, but she's in that organization, and she continues to spread the message of Gold Star families. Vicki Dreyer and her family, she lost her son Corey on the same date as my brother, but years later, and has just been another person that has been so active. The Martins family, the Tammy Pulaski, the Piestewa family. We all know the story of Piestewa Peak, or at least we should, of how Lori Piesta was the first Native American woman who was killed in combat. She was killed, oddly enough, on March 23rd, which is my brother's birthday. It's just an odd coincidence, and I had the very great privilege of being with Lori's mom and family on the anniversary of her death, and at the Piestewa dinner where they honored families. And the reason why I mention all of these people is throughout, in spite of their grief, and while they are grieving, all of them have turned around and served the people around them, making other people stronger, reaching out to other Gold Star families, reaching out and making sure that the new members of this club that is so horrible can endure it as much as possible with people around them. They've done great work for veteran organizations and for military service organizations in carrying on the memory of their children. And I can't think of a stronger group of people. So this Memorial Day weekend, I would be my wish that you would tell the stories of the men and women that serve. If you want to tell my brother's story, I'd be honored. If you want to look up Pat Tillman's story, I'm sure their family would be honored. The Piestewa story and Lori's story and the grace of her family would be a great one, or any of the families I told you about. But if you're a parent and you're going to make sure your children understand the significance of the sacrifice, I think it starts with you as a parent. Nobody wants to think about their child being in trouble or being in danger or being ill, and never mind the thought of losing a child. But for a moment, allow yourself to understand the significance of that loss of these parents. I think it helps you tell the story, because the acorn usually doesn't far fall from the tree. When these heroic men and women do what they do it because they're a legacy of service. My mother, with the strength and the grace that she endured losing my brother, it was something you never get over. You never get past it. But what you do with the rest of your life tells the story of who you are when there is tremendous loss. So I hope you have got festivities planned for Memorial Day. I hope you're planning on doing a lot of great things and fun things. It's different for my family, and it should be, but I hope yours has got something planned that's fun and American and all of that. But maybe tell one of these stories. Recognize in your own mind that for certain parents and siblings and family members and loved ones and widows and widowers, it is a really tough time. But we all endure. So thanks for your support. Thanks for your messages. And thanks for everybody reaching out. It means a lot to me. We'll be back on Tuesday to talk more about what's going on in the world here, and especially in Arizona. Have a great, blessed Memorial Day, everyone. We'll be back on Monday or Tuesday morning. God bless.